This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by MMComfortSystems.com. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
It seems to me that media outlets and some talking heads are truly trying to get this to ignite a race war. What's going on in Kenosha gives another opportunity to folks on the left to turn this into another summer of love, only, of course, fall into winter. They spent all of their time since the George Floyd death pushing a specific narrative. There are two justice systems. There is institutionalized racism in our criminal justice system. And they're using, of all cases, the Kyle Rittenhouse case, which has literally nothing to do with race. There's no racial element in this whatsoever. But they are telling you otherwise. They are trying to convince you, as the jury deliberations began, that this is an issue about race. And right now, the protesters are outside trying to intimidate this jury. They're trying to intimidate this jury. You have Joy Reid's racist blog over at MSNBC. They've got some guest writer with them, and he's got quite the hot take. They tweeted out a link to his piece. His name is Jahan Jones. And this is the tweet. Kyle Rittenhouse put on quite a show for the nearly all-white jury in his murder trial, and it's likely at least one of them bought it. The all-white jury. We went from wanting a jury of one's peers to wanting a majority black jury. It's super bizarre. What does the race of the jury have to do with the Kyle Rittenhouse trial? At least I understand when you're saying that a defendant is black or Latino and you don't have anyone who's black or Latino on jury. Like, I get that. I still don't think it's relevant, but at least I understand it. You have a white guy who's accused of shooting three white people. So what exactly is the racial element here? What is the anger here? It is truly bizarre. Truly bizarre. Right now, and we'll get the results shortly. I don't know if it's actually underway. But Judge Bruce Schroeder is to poll the jurors to see whether or not they want to keep deliberating into the evening. They started earlier this morning. And by around, I want to say 9:30 a.m. their time, so I believe it was 6:30 our time, they started to deliberate. Maybe 6:30, 7 o'clock this morning. And they still haven't reached a verdict, but if they're close, they'll stay throughout the evening. My hope is, even if they're close, that they withhold a result until tomorrow. If they're truly that close and they could potentially go on into the evening, I hope they don't, because this is something that could ignite into a riot. Arguably, the same kind of riot, even though they're now again calling it a peaceful protest, just a rally. But it could turn into a riot like we saw originally that brought Kyle Rittenhouse to Kenosha. Now, yes, we have National Guardsmen on call. They're there. They're ready. But they were also on call before. We just didn't use them. And again, it led to the incident bringing Kyle Rittenhouse to Kenosha. Right now, there are people larger and larger and larger in numbers coming out to protest. They are demanding, while the jury is deliberating, that they demand that Kyle Rittenhouse be found guilty. And those jurors are going to be hearing those chants as they're deliberating. They're going to know what's on the line. And that is unfair to Kyle Rittenhouse. It would be unfair to any defendant, even the ones who are clearly guilty. When you've got a mob outside threatening to riot if you do not give them the correct result. correct as they see it. Not correct as the facts show it to be, but correct as they see it.
I'm here because this is going totally wrong. It is a show, and the whole nation media is calling it a show. It's racist. It's biased. There should be a mistrial.
It's racist. Who is it racist against? Because clearly she's not on the side of white Kyle Rittenhouse. I'm assuming she's on the side of the white so-called victims. So who is it racist against, lady? Oh, you were told it's racist because you're one of the 12 people who watches Joy Reid. Or maybe at your last visit to the airport, you saw a clip of Don Lemon on CNN. Another protester is out there speaking to Fox News. She just wants their voices heard.
Without our voices, I just feel like we need to show them that we're not playing and we're here and we are listening, we're watching.
We're here, we're listening, we're watching. You better deliver us the result we want. We're here, we're listening, we're watching. About an hour or so ago, the jury requested some copies of pages 7 through 36 of the jury instructions. They also previously asked for pages 1 through 6. They're just going over the specifics on how they're supposed to judge what happened. So basically, they asked for all of the, because they're 36 pages worth of jury instructions. In fact, the judge spent all day on Friday discussing what the instructions would be. And then most of yesterday, before the closing arguments, giving those instructions. And as that's happening, you've got people like this woman in very hipster glasses and, of course, a beanie, declaring she knows better than anybody else.
I'm here to support the calls for Kyle to go to prison for a very long time.
For a very long time. All the evidence shows that he was not the aggressor. Oh, but he shouldn't have been there in the first place. Okay. Being somewhere you're not supposed to be is certainly not a crime. We know it's not a crime when people who are out past a curfew and riot don't get charged with anything. So, I mean, this kid is someone who could have been there the same way anybody else could have been there. But you see, he defended himself and he happens to be white. And we were told that he was a white supremacist who weirdly only went after white people. I mean, again, we said this yesterday. Even the idea that he's a white supremacist makes no sense in the context of who the victims are. Were there no black people there? No people of color at all? Why was he running away from the aggressors? Why, with that AR-15 that the prosecution decided to point at the jury yesterday, why is it that he didn't go towards the people who were the threat? Why did he run away? I'm asking that. If he's this cold-blooded killer who decided to show up to Kenosha to shoot a whole bunch of people, why did he run away from the threats multiple times? Why did he only pull the trigger after not just the aggression that happened towards him, but after the guys got very, very close and went for his weapon? Why do you think that is? Super weird. But let's ask some dude in a ponytail talking to Fox News why he thought that Kyle Rittenhouse showed up.
We seen him out there that night. We seen all the militia on the roof pointing their lasers at everybody. People walking through our parking lot pointing lasers at them. He was, as far as I'm concerned, he was there to show off so he could get on social media holding an AR-15.
Wait, just real quick. I thought he showed up with the intent to murder people. Are we off that talking point?
I don't know.
At least with him.
With him, yeah.
Okay.
Just social media likes. Clout.
Got it. Yeah. He did it for the social currency. Okay. Unlike the people who showed up to the rallies and the protests with the shirts that said BLM and their hands up saying, you know, hands up, don't you? Other than that, they were not there for social media purposes or the social currency. Just the people who were there with the specific duty of protecting businesses that were getting torched while police were not able to do anything. They were there for Instagram. Okay, got it.
And brag to his friends. He had no clue. He was a scared little kid that should have not been here. Period.
Okay. You can hold that position. I've said that. I don't think you should have been there. Doesn't mean you committed murder. Doesn't mean you should go to jail. Doesn't mean that you invited someone to attack you.
What he did was horrible, and there's people out here saying that, you know, self-defense isn't a crime, but it's like me breaking into somebody's house, okay, and them coming at me, and I shoot them and kill them because they were going to kill me for being in their home and robbing them, and that's how I kind of feel like this is like, and I don't like that.
Oh my god, like, I'm an idiot, and like, I tried really hard to come up with like an example, like, to use, like, and stuff, but like, I kind of dropped the like ball and like totally failed. That was an epic fail. Like, I'm so sorry for saying that in front of a camera, because I realized that, you know, going into someone's home and then shooting someone, that's actual like murder and like stuff. But like, someone coming here and like protecting themselves, like, oh my god, like, could you erase all that? Like, please don't air that, please. Could you blur my face, like, and stuff? You can't. Oh, it's live. Oh, I'm like gonna like leave now. Like, bye, peace out. Hands up, don't shoot. Yeah, got it. Thank you. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, there's some criticisms out in Tacoma over the selection process for the next police chief. I'll tell you what the criticisms are when we come back. I'll be on Fox News at night later this evening, 9 o'clock. If you can't watch it live when it occurs, make sure you head on over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/JasonRants, youtube.com/JasonRants. No, I don't know what it is I'm talking about tonight, but I'm sure it'll be something based in the news.
I hope that you prepare for it.
Once I find out what the stories are and they pick me up in my car and I'm 3 minutes away from a drive that takes a total of maybe 7 minutes, I will prepare. I promise. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Tacoma?
There are anti-police activists out there who are mad that they were not included in picking the finalists for the Tacoma Police Department chief spot that is open. It's currently being filled by an interim chief in a way that was kind of set up to fail. And in the time that he's been serving as interim, the city has been looking for a replacement. Now, activist groups that do not like the police should not have a seat at the table. However, communities should, even at this stage, to a degree. Now, Shelby Fritz is the director of the Human Resources Department over at the City of Tacoma, and she spoke with King 5. And she said, look, we just want to make sure that the most qualified candidates are being looked at. We want to help lead the way in changing the Tacoma Police Department.
In terms of transformation, you don't always want to stick with a narrow pool of candidates. Let's get the broadest, most experienced group of people we can, whether they live in Florida or Kentucky or California or wherever.
It turns out that every one of the four finalists are not from Washington. They don't currently police in Washington. And so she's framing this around that kind of criticism, that we couldn't find anyone who's local. And maybe they couldn't find anyone who's local. Maybe the people who applied for this position, who did apply, who were local, maybe they weren't actually qualified. I have no problem with going outside of a city or a county or a state if you need to for the right person. But there are activists in the community like Tanisha Antoine, who's the president of a group called Legally Black. This is a Tacoma group that pushes the fiction that police go around murdering unarmed black people. She is saying it's not about their experience in policing outside of Tacoma. That's not what this is about. We're upset that we weren't a part of the conversation.
They did not utilize any of the black or brown community to be a part of the selection process.
Huh. Now, I would normally say, depending on how large the applicant pool is, you don't give community access to hundreds of applicants. That would be too much. Let's say you had 200 people up for this job putting in an application. You expect that a bunch of different community organizations are going to look through everyone and pick a finalist? No, you expect, and I think this is reasonable, you expect at the city level or the county level, whoever ends up doing the hiring, obviously in King County, for example, for sheriff, it's being done on a county level. You would expect them to look at the large pool of applicants and winnow it down. get something to a more digestible number. And then you say, okay, community organizations, take a look at this. Okay, labor union, come look at this. Tell us what you think. So in that regard, I kind of understand this. Though I don't think it was hundreds of people who applied for the job. I think it's about a dozen, which is actually kind of embarrassing and tells you a lot about the state of policing right now. But I do think you then have them sit down at the table beforehand. You don't have to go over the applications, but you can say, hey, what do you think we should be looking for in the next police chief? What matters to you? You try to get community buy-in. Now, there are going to be organizations like Legally Black that won't actually be happy with the choice unless it's some activist that they support. That's why I say we ignore groups like that. But you do go out into the community. You talk to the leaders of the community. You connect with church groups. You connect, obviously, with the Tacoma Police Union, the Local 6, and get a general sense of where they stand. That wasn't done here. That wasn't done here. And as a result, you're not going to get community buy-in because people like Tanisha are saying, well, they don't know what it's like to be a police officer here. They don't know what our concerns are.
There is a blind spot you already have. And we've already seen that when we have the internal Tacoma Police Department chief being brought in, they're not doing anything different. So fresh blood is necessary. However, when you're not including your community, you are failing your community.
I think there's some validity to that. Again, as long as you're picking, you know, members of the community that actually reflect the community and don't reflect just one ideological background, I think that is totally valid. You want whomever it is to come to the job, understanding what the community concern is and having a general belief that they're at least going to give you a shot. And if you don't include them as part of the process, whether we're talking about Tacoma or Seattle or Everett or King County, I think that that's a huge problem. And I feel bad for the four candidates because assuming they're all equally up for this job, equally qualified for this job, you are starting them at a deficit. On top of that, the police union hasn't been involved in any meaningful way. The union president, Detective Henry Betts, is going to stop by at about 5:15 or 5:10 today, giving us an update on where he's at. I know they're not happy. So you've not made anyone happy in this process. Now, is that fair to the four candidates? We can go over them very quickly. Michael Carroll is retired from the Alameda County Sheriff's Office in San Leandro, California. He retired back in April. He was responsible for Emergency Services Communication Center. He had a bunch of different leadership roles, according to King 5. You've got Sean Case, who's currently with the Anchorage Police Department. He's a captain responsible for internal affairs, patrol, the administration, and inspection divisions. You've got Kathy McAlpine, who is the police chief right now for the T-Guard Police Department out in Oregon. She at least has some Tacoma PD experience, used to be a patrol officer there. And during that time, she served in several leadership positions, including the assistant chief of police for administrative and investigation bureaus. And then you've got Avery Moore, who's currently an assistant chief of police in the investigations bureau over at the Dallas Police Department. My guess is out of the four, purely based on what's written there, is the last two seem to be top contenders of the four. That would be my guess. You have Kathy McAlpine, who's a police chief in not quite the same size city, but a similar city, who actually has Tacoma roots as a former Tacoma Police Patrol officer. And then my guess is Avery Moore, when you've hit the assistant chief position in a city like Dallas, that's pretty significant. Anchorage, they're not going to be happy here. It's there's no snow.
Are you telling me producer Peyton didn't get into the final group?
I thought that went without saying. If they you know, ignored Detective Rance, they're definitely ignoring you.
I could have swore producer Peyton was going to make that final.
I'm sorry. Line. What fake credentials do you have, like I do?
Well, I have real credentials.
Oh yeah,
I'm a real producer.
It's a police chief position.
Yeah, I know. That's fine.
I mean, I have real credentials as a talk show host. You noticed that
but
I used...
You didn't submit it as talk show host, Rance. You submitted it as Detective Rance.
Yeah, because looking for a talk show host for a police chief is stupid. But looking for a fake detective who's a talk show host makes sense. You get my meaning?
You were dishonest on your application by putting detective.
It said fake detective.
Well,
I
you
was
have fake
totally
detective
honest.
Work.
Yeah,
I have real producer work on mine.
Oh my gosh. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Don't forget, you should subscribe to the podcast. Go wherever it is you get your podcast, just search Jason Rant Show and bam, hit the subscribe button. I made it also easy. If you text the keyword rants, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link. Right now I've got a story up at ktth.com and I was very excited that it was doing so well today. This isn't a breaking news story. I just looked at some data concerning COVID here in Washington State. And sometimes it feels when I do those deep dive research pieces or even sort of on the surface level, dives into the data, doesn't go too deep because I don't want to lose people. Every once in a while, I wonder if that's actually going to connect with people. I know that people like my investigations, the exclusives. But I was pleasantly surprised to see how well this was doing, and I think it's because a lot of people have wondered exactly what the rate of breakthrough cases, what that rate is, and how does it compare to the death rate. How does it compare to other rates of infection and whatnot? And it's funny because I hear all the time, whether it's coming from politicians and public health activists or from public health officials to talking heads on TV, what do we get over and over and over again? We get a celebration, rightfully so, of how the COVID vaccine keeps you out of a hospital or keeps you out of an early grave. And there's no doubt about it that the data backs up that claim, the efficacy of the vaccines. Except those same people say virtually nothing about the death rate for unvaccinated COVID patients. The numbers are almost identical, in fact. The number of deaths, that rate, that death rate in Washington State, it's lower. It is lower than the rate of breakthrough cases, your chances of getting COVID having been vaccinated. Now, they change these numbers, they update the numbers every couple of weeks. The latest one showed a little over 69,000 breakthrough cases in the state of Washington, and it represents about 1.33% of the COVID vaccinated Washingtonians over the age of 12. They're not yet looking at the 5+ number. When that point comes out, these numbers will shift a bit. But right now, the vaccination breakthrough case rate is 1.33. The death rate is 1.19 in Washington State. Little under 9,000 COVID-related deaths out of a little over 750,000 positive and confirmed cases. 1.19 versus 1.33. I will go out and say, yes, it's obviously lower, but let's just call it almost even. I think the numbers are a little bit misleading. I concede that, though it goes in place, it goes towards my argument. I think the death rate is going to be much lower because there are people who had COVID, didn't realize it, didn't get tested because they didn't have any symptoms. And so when you account for that, that obviously adds to the positive rates, but doesn't add to the death rate. So that number is probably much, much, much lower. Likewise, I'm assuming that the breakthrough case rate is much higher than what it is. How much? I have no idea. It could be maybe 1.9%, or it could be 3%, or it could be 10%. Because a lot of people, again, same thing, if you've got COVID while vaccinated and you don't have any symptoms, you're not getting tested. Why would you get tested? It doesn't make any sense. And since we do know that the vaccine cuts down significantly on the impact of those symptoms, then it goes to reason, that number is going to be higher, which thus brings the rate higher in that case. Why is it that we don't have conversations, honest conversations, reasonable conversations, about both numbers being so low? Every time there is a breakthrough case, we hear it come with a caveat. Some of that is expected, but it's still incredibly rare. Go get your vaccine. Have we not heard that over and over and over again? All the time. And yet we don't hear anything about the death rate being low. In fact, we hear them talk about the vaccine as if you don't get it, you will die. And if you don't die, if you're lucky enough to survive, you'll give it to someone else who could die. You might give it to grandma. Ignoring the fact that you can actually still pass on COVID while vaccinated. Seems to be less likely, but it's still very much possible. You can obviously get it when vaccinated. We have at least 70,000 cases here in Washington State that shows that. But Jason, it's a small percentage. Yeah, it is. You're right. Small percentage. Smaller percentage are the people that actually die after getting COVID. But Jason, what about the people who are 70, 80 plus? They die when they get COVID in larger percentage points. Correct. You are correct. When you parse it out and you go to that 70 or 80 plus zone or anyone who has a very serious underlying health condition, the rate increases. So when you come up with public policy that addresses that specific concern, understanding that someone who is, say, I don't know, 14 years old gets COVID, they're going to be okay. Statistically, it's almost impossible for them to die. It's not impossible, but it's incredibly improbable. Don't have the conversation whatsoever. You have the conversation about treating COVID. Oh my gosh, if you dare to say ivermectin, you get accused of eating horse goo. Of course, that's not what's happening in many of these cases, like, oh, say, Joe Rogan. Oh, but Jason, didn't you see that the Washington State Poison Center, they got a huge increase of calls all about getting poisoned, potentially from ivermectin. Except, of course, that story turned out to not be true. They said that they tripled the calls that they got in the previous year on ivermectin, as if you expected before ivermectin was even discussed that they would get any calls whatsoever. What was it? Something along the lines of 31? 31 calls as of September. 31 calls. The majority of them apparently were just asking about whether or not it was safe to take, which is what you would want someone to do when they question whether or not a drug might harm them. All of this is made up. It is a narrative coming from the media. And there are implications of this. You can report on the benefits of the vaccine because there are plenty. You can also tell people that the death rate of COVID is very, very low because that's the truth. You can highlight who is most at risk from COVID without undercutting the vaccine benefits. People aren't as stupid or naive as you might think, dear media friends. Although, admittedly, if you spend enough time on Twitter, I think that could change your perception of the public. Willfully ignoring data that is easily available online. I got all of this online. It took me no more than, 4 minutes? It makes people question the intent. It makes people distrust you. It makes people wonder what some of the other data points you're not being honest about. And then they come up with their own narrative. And it's usually not in favor of what you want them to take away from these conversations. No one can honestly argue that the death rate being lower isn't relevant. No one can argue that. It's as relevant as the low breakthrough case rate. And by the way, this is data that should be celebrated. Should we not celebrate that there's a lower death rate from COVID than people thought would be the case back when this first started? Should we not celebrate that? Isn't that good news? But instead, you've got people overstating the threat. You will die if you don't get the vaccine. And when you overstate threats like that, people tend to catch on. Some more quickly than others, but people catch on. And then ultimately, there becomes fear fatigue. Fear fatigue followed by this realization that the threat is being overstated. And that's where there's an actual threat worth taking seriously. Because more and more people will start to tune out the warnings when maybe you're finally being honest and they shouldn't. Is the Delta variant to blame for the rise in case rates of the unvaccinated in Washington and around the globe? Yes, 100%. However, perhaps public health officials and media members who keep overhyping every single story while pushing inconsistent messaging. Maybe they're playing a role in the rate of people who still don't want to get the vaccine. Now, maybe this intentional fear-mongering isn't about this vaccination at all cost mentality that I think most Democrat public health officials have and most of the liberal media members have. But maybe it's also for clicks and views, which doesn't seem so noble, does it? I'm talking to you guys over at King 5 and Como and Q13 and Cairo. I'm talking to you guys as you prop up some of the false narratives and disingenuous talking points. And even though more and more people are catching on to this, and even though more and more people are starting to resist and saying, wait. What you just told me I know is false. There seems to be no end in sight. Now, if you want to read this piece, if you want to help spread the data, if you want to bring some semblance of rationality to a conversation on COVID, I would ask you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Text RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. And I'll send you a link to my blog, not just so you can read it, though you should, but also so you can share it on social media. Let's get some eyeballs on it. Let's grow this story even more. 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword RANTZ. Welcome back to the Jason RANTZ Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. It was a big win in Virginia yet again, though this time having to do on the legal side when we're talking about education. A district just agreed to permanently reinstate PE teacher Byron Tanner Cross after originally suspending him because he refused to refer to transgender students by a preferred pronoun. His position was actually pretty clear. I'm not going to be disrespectful to people. I'm not going to be rude to people, but I'm not going to pretend that gender doesn't exist. There are obvious ways around using a personal pronoun that a transgender person asks you to use. You can just call them by their name. There's no evidence, by the way, that he was going after transgender folks. He just said no to a policy that was put in place. A policy that basically says 80-40 policy says you have to use the preferred pronouns of your students. He said he's not going to do that. In fact, back on May 25th, he spoke in front of the board.
I love all of my students, but I will never lie to them regardless of the consequences. I'm a teacher, but I serve God first, and I will not affirm that a biological boy can be a girl and vice versa because it's against my religion, it's lying to a child, it's abuse to a child, and it's sinning against our God.
Now, because he took that position, they ended up letting him go. He sued. He was reinstated. Judge said, whoa, you can't do this. The school appealed because they want to word police pronouns. But now, as I said, they've come to an agreement to just reinstate him and give up because they had to have seen that what they did was unconstitutional. You can't tell a teacher that he has to abide by certain language rules. You just don't do that. Now, the teacher's lawyer's name is Tyson Langhofer. He's senior counsel over at the Alliance Defending Freedom. They're the ones who took this on. They said this was all about fighting for the rights of viewpoints.
Our argument to the court was clear. The government has no right to force teachers to adhere to contested beliefs about human nature that they disagree with. A truly tolerant society can permit differences and accommodate diverse views. But the school board refuses to allow middle ground. Instead, they are compelling conformity with only one view.
Which goes against the very nature of what education is supposed to be about. You are supposed to learn how to think and come up with your own ideas. You're supposed to be able to express them to one another, not force conformity, which is what's happening. And it's funny, the creep of this getting into lower levels. This was a thing that about a decade or so ago on college campuses was becoming a real threat, a real concern. That you're not allowed to have certain positions. And I remember when I was in college, I graduated back in 2004, and I don't quite remember things being this bad, but I certainly remember, even at the time, a lot of times in retrospect, it becomes more clear. But even at the time, I was thinking, oh my gosh, this is one biased campus. You're not supposed to be a conservative. In fact, college is really what made me a conservative. I credit the freshman year I had at Occidental College. It pushed me to become a conservative. And now all of a sudden, it's happening in high schools, middle and elementary school. It's happening in kindergarten. And that's due in large part because of the new generation of teachers coming in who are younger, who hold certain political positions, and they want to change your children's views. They don't want them to come up with a viewpoint on their own. Not even close. They want to tell them what to think. In this case, it's very clearly wrong. And I'm glad that they sued, and I'm glad that this PE teacher is getting his job back.
Policy 8040 harms the very students it claims to protect and deprives all teachers and school officials of the ability to live according to their conscience. Together, Monica, Kim, and Tanner are challenging the policy and had asked the court to immediately stop enforcement of the policy against teachers while the litigation continues. We are confident that the court will act to protect our clients and their students from being harmed by this unconstitutional policy.
And he ends up winning. At the end of the day, they're going to win this. They're going to win this in a big way. It'd be one thing if this PE teacher was being disrespectful. I don't think that you should do that. It's another thing when they simply are saying, yeah, I will respect the person, but I'm not going to pretend they don't have a gender. That is too much for me. I have a slightly different view when it comes to transgender individuals. If they present as a different gender, I'll use a pronoun in a respectful way. I won't claim that they are biological males or biological females, because they're not. My personal line is drawn when you tell me to start using they, them, or just made-up pronouns that don't really make any sense. They're not words. You just made them up. I'm not going to do that. The whole, well, you have to say Latinx. No, I don't. Choosing not to. No one actually identifies by Latinx except for hardcore activists and their white supporters who are putting it out there and pretending this is a thing. If you don't like Latino, that's not my fault. It's not my fault. Why don't you go blame the language? Because you realize that it's gendered. Like when you have a group of women plus one guy, you call them guys. You don't call it according to their rules. So I think it's actually a macroaggression to say that the Spanish language, for example, is wrong. Who are you to say it, white guy? Who are you to say it, white lady? Yeah, I said lady. How's that?
Sassy. You're sassy today, aren't you?
I'm a little sleepy today.
You're always sleepy.
That's fair. I'm especially tired. I did get my topics for tonight's show.
You're still not going to do any sort of research until
I don't. One of them is my blog today that I just did in the last segment, so I don't really need to.
Well, that counts as show prep.
Yeah, I suppose. One was Joy Reid getting upset with voters giving low approval ratings to Biden. She goes, I guess I see you cash that $2,000 check. Yeah, it turns out you can't really buy loyalty, which is actually what we would prefer to have out of voters. We don't want them easily bribed. Sorry, Joy.